Welcome back to The Takeaway. Oh, hi, Billie Holiday, you're here. I love when you come around every time there's a blue moon.
Blue moon, you saw me standing alone.
Of course, the moon isn't really blue. We know that. It's when there's two full moons in any single month. Wait, sorry, Billy. Sorry for the interruption. What's that? Hold on. Tonight there's also a...
There's a super moon above us. There's a super moon above...
The super moon is back. It's working blue this time around. The super moon, of course, when the full moon coincides with the closest distance in the moon's elliptical orbit around the Earth. And closer means, basically, it looks bigger. Wait, hang on, you guys. There's more.
Piercing through a lunar eclipse. Don't be bitter.
That's right. It's a very local celestial trifecta, a blue moon, a supermoon, and a total lunar eclipse. Can you feel the moonbeams? Well, don't freak out. Because at times like this, we often turn to Jason Kendall, adjunct professor of astronomy at William Paterson University. Jason, welcome.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here to tell us everything we need to know about this lunar craziness that we have on our hands. Jason, you don't even need a telescope for this one.
No, you don't. You don't need a telescope at all. All you got to do is go outside and look up at that moon. It's always wonderful to go out and see a lunar eclipse because it's very strange. The moon appears to be being eaten by the shadow of the Earth.
Explain, though, the rarity here. People have seen lunar eclipses and they're spectacular. There's some debate over the supermoon, by the way. We're going to get to that. Blue moons do happen once every in a blue moon. Yeah. But all three together, how rare?
It's pretty rare. The next one that'll happen in the United States is about 2028. If you consider only the continental U.S., then you'd have to go back 150 years in order to see when this was last seen in the U.S. But lunar eclipses themselves are relatively common. They happen very frequently, so you shouldn't. But it's not a really big deal for a lunar eclipse. But that doesn't mean they're not pretty and not wonderful and not worth going outside and seeing.
Is the lunar eclipse more spectacular, more remarkable from a viewing perspective, because the moon is that much larger in the supermoon phase when it's closest to the Earth?
Well, it's only about 10% larger in an angular diameter, meaning you can think about the way to think about the size of the moon is if you take your thumb at arm's length and look at it with one eye, that the moon is always about half the width of your thumb held at arm's length, and it works for pretty much everybody and every thumb. So it never gets much bigger than half that length, and so it's hard to actually perceive the difference in angular size as it goes. But that doesn't mean it doesn't do anything. The fun part about it is just simply that it gets this blood red, and that's due to the refracted light of the sun going through the Earth's atmosphere.
That's the blood moon you're talking
about.
That's
the blood moon.
Spectacular.
Yes.
Jason, Neil deGrasse Tyson, America's favorite astronomer, astrophysicist, friend of The Takeaway, been on lots of times. I know you're ready for this. Supermoon talk, Neil deGrasse Tyson is not feeling it. Listen.
Okay, first, I got to nip this in the bud.
Okay.
Don't get me started. So there's something called a supermoon.
Okay.
I don't know who first called it a supermoon.
All right.
I don't know, but if you have a 16-inch pizza, would you call that a super pizza compared with a 15-inch pizza? It's a slightly bigger moon. I ain't using the adjective supermoon.
Jason Kendall, Neil deGrasse Tyson is all over social media at times like this saying, we reserve the word super for lots of things that truly are super. This is not one of them in his view.
Well, that's perfectly fine. If we wish to give it its proper title, it's a perigean full moon, meaning it's a full moon at perigee. But supermoon was coined not in the last few years by someone who was actually not an astronomer. And what was happening was closer than 90% of the time. And that allows for a lot of supermoons. So I kind of like supermoon because it gets people outside and going up and looking. And it doesn't really have an astronomical or a research level thing that's important for it. But it certainly has something that says, wow, this is neat. Go on outside. Take a look. And that's
lunar eclipses can take place over more than one night in the full phase. I think that viewers in the western part of the United States, moon viewers, might have seen a lunar eclipse this morning. The rest of us might have missed it already.
That's correct. The lunar eclipse was the moon during the lunar eclipse was just entering the shadow of the Earth, the umbral shadow, the darkest part of the shadow, just as the moon was setting in New York. But way out in California, they got a chance to see the entire thing. So pretty much if you were in the Pacific, you got to see it. And people on the western rim of the Pacific will get to see the moon rising throughout the lunar eclipse. So the lunar eclipse itself lasts no more than an hour or so as the moon takes its time to go through the shadow.
And Jason, what's best here, a good pair of binoculars?
That's a wonderful thing. But I actually saw it on the deck of a cruise ship in 2011, and I just looked up, and that was fantastic because it's neat to just see the moon having this sliver, this circular chunk being taken away from it as it moves. So yeah, binoculars are very, very interesting to use. People actually want to know the brightness of the moon. So sometimes when that's actually a real research thing. If you look at the brightness of the moon as it's in a lunar eclipse, what you end up getting is measuring the total amount of particulates in the atmosphere, say to do volcanoes or something, and that shows the albedo of the Earth, and that can help for climate studies.
Well, Jason, let's take a minute. We got to run, but let's talk about policy for just a second. President Trump didn't mention it in his speech last night, but he has talked about returning the United States to the moon, manned missions. In preparations for that eventual trip to Mars, what does that mean for U.S. space exploration? Are you a supporter?
I'm a complete supporter of returning humanity, not just the United States, humanity to the moon, and taking the huge step to Mars. This thing would actually be an incredible boon for the economy because the money doesn't go to the moon or to Mars. It goes into high technology jobs. It goes into manufacturing. It goes into, you know, people who buy T-shirts next to Kennedy Space Center, you know, everything. So this would be a huge boost for the economy in the way that an infrastructure bill would as well. But I just think it's cool because then it was funny. All my students at William Patterson, they find this to be really dreamy that they can go to the moon. They say, wow, I really want to do that. They think of themselves. The younger people say, wow, I want to do this. And that's neat. So I just think it's like if we can do it, then if we can build those rockets, they will go. It's as simple as that.
We can build those rockets because we've built them before. Mm-hmm. Jason Kendall, I appreciate you stopping by to help us through the lunar trifecta. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Jason Kendall, adjunct professor of astronomy at William Patterson University. Well, we've been hearing from you about this moon age daydream.
Hi, this is Nathan from Oklahoma. I was just thinking we really should have a simpler name for it. And though I know the blue has no actual bearing on the color, my thought is blue and red make purple, which to me has always seemed like a majestic color. So maybe a royal moon? Let me know what you think, guys.
A royal purple moon? Nathan, I like it. I think it's perfect for this divided country. Everybody can look up whether they're red or blue, see the royal purple moon. I love it. Do you have a name for this blood, blue, red, purple moon? Let us know, 8778-MY-TAKE. You can always tweet us at The Takeaway. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Todd Zwillick. This is The Takeaway.
The Takeaway is supported by Staples, offering storage solutions for business, including file folders, banker's boxes, and storage bins for getting organized. More at Staples Stores or staples.com. Staples, it's pro time. And by Progressive Insurance, providing tools designed to help customers consider options from multiple insurers. Comparisons available at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's progressive.
PRI, Public Radio International.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.